Good afternoon, everyone. The noon bells outside my office just quit ringing, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. Thanks for being here today. We've found that these noon hour sessions have been very popular, provides a great way to share information with campus and for people to ask questions. So our topic of this session is employee issues, and it's really targeted at staff. So faculty may have different issues and different options, but our focus today will really be on helping employees address issues of concern around childcare, general well-being, reducing spread, interacting with students and others. So we have a variety of speakers, and then we'll open it up for question and answer at the end of the session as well. And please feel free to use the chat box to ask your questions. I want to let you know that I have to leave today at 12:30 for another meeting. I've never charged out of a Zoom session before, but I want you to know that I have that other commitment. So when I disappear, that is why. So to get us started today, we have Casey Peterson, the Dean of Students, who is going to talk with us about how students are being educated on reducing spread. So I'll turn it over to Casey.
Yeah, I was asked to just provide a little bit of an update. I think that we've heard a lot about and talked a lot about what we can do for students over the last 2 or 3 months. And we haven't spent a lot of time talking, especially in this group, about what we need students to do for us. And so that's part of what I'm here to kind of assure you that we're doing. And the PCCW, the President's Council on Campus Wellbeing, did a survey a while back, and we did see that, just for your information, that faculty are the most concerned about all of this coming back work, and our incoming students are the least concerned. I was happy to see that the older the students get, the more their concern matches the faculty and staff concern. And so we are going to be working with our students here in the coming weeks to really educate them on what their responsibilities are for following the plans that we have on campus, for trying to keep not only themselves, but the rest of us in a safe and productive place too. So my goal is to, with this incoming class, is to raise their anxiety level just a little bit and get them a little bit more in the mode of thinking about the community. And so we do have some messaging that'll be going out to all students here just before they come back that will outline some of that. We have a session with our Welcome Week leaders. We have 150 Welcome Week leaders who will be training next week, and they'll be meeting with small groups of these new students over the course of Welcome Week, and that's a point where we'll be training them on how to role model, what those responsibilities are, all of that stuff as well. And then we've been working with our student organizations and the guidelines that we've got out there to try to make sure that they're planning events, meetings and such in ways that match the guidelines and standards as well. So there hasn't been a lot of education out there to students yet, but it is all coming. So that's the update I have right now. Oh, and I'll put a plug in for tomorrow if you have time. There's a lot of question about enforcement of especially the face mask usage, that type of thing. And we're going to dive into that in pretty good detail tomorrow.
My instructions were that Casey was first up today, but I don't know who comes after Casey. So please feel free to speak up if you are on the agenda next.
I think it's John and Pat with some HR issues.
Excellent.
Yeah, so,
real issues.
So yeah, this is John. Pat's in the background. If she needs to get involved, she can. She spoke yesterday on telecommuting, and some of that might resurface here. But I wanted to talk to everyone. We are getting a lot of questions right now regarding some of the decisions that are being made in K through 12 with the hybrid situation. I know that a lot of it hasn't been finalized, but it looks like in Fargo and West Fargo, they are going to be having some form of hybrid, and maybe over in Moorhead too, due to the COVID. And so the questions are, does that count as a school closure? And things surrounding the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. If you remember, at the end of last school year, we had a similar situation, except all of it was remote, and our employees had to react in different ways to that. The government came out with H.R. 6201, which is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. We have that up on our site for under the COVID link. All our forms related to this are there. This is one, and really it provides a great summary of all the categories that are a part of the act. So I do want to share a document. Can you see that, Laura? I'm looking at you. Okay. So this is a form that's out on our site. I figured I'd start here. And you can see there are five categories which are covered under the act. In this, I know that Dr. Fitzgerald said that some of this is for staff, but this actual act covers employees to include staff and faculty and student workers as well at a prorated rate. So you can see there are several different categories, many of them around quarantining. And but the one I really want to focus on is the fifth one down. And if you can see my cursor, it's caring for a son or daughter whose school or childcare is closed or unavailable due to COVID-19 and unable to work or telework. This is covered under the COVID leave, and there's an initial 80-hour period that's covered, and then there's an additional 10 weeks. So there's about a 12-week period in there that we track as FMLA that can be used intermittently that is covered under this. So if we do get into a hybrid situation and the employee needs to participate in their son or daughter's education on intermittent days, this is a leave that can be used. We would just need documentation. And again, if it's a school closure in an area, we're going to know about that. But there is some other documentation that we would need, and I'm going to go over some of that too. Just note that this type of leave only pays 2/3 of the salary of the employee. The other third would need to be supplemented through annual leave because it's not a sick type situation. Okay, so the other leaves are paid, the top three are paid fully, but this leave is 2/3. And just know that this act came out at the beginning of the coronavirus outbreak, and it's right now only good through December 31st of 2020. Now, does that mean that it won't get extended or there could be changes to this? Most definitely there could be, but right now it's through December of 2020. So you'll see this is a three-page form. I'm going to go to page 3 now because that talks about some of the documentation. Bear with me here. So if you're going to do the leave for the school closures, et cetera, there's some other information that we're going to need that would need to be filled out on this document. So that's one thing that we've used for documentation. I'm going to stop sharing here and go to a different document so you can understand why we need to do that. All right, can you see this one here with the if a case, yeah. So these are the IRS guidelines. And the reason why we need that is to comply with those. So the name of the school, obviously the name and age of your children, a representation that no other person will be providing for the care of the child during the time which you're trying to use the FMLA, and the inability to work or telework. And the reason I want to bring this up is if you have a child that's between 15 and 17, it's going to require some additional information which we track because of these IRS guidelines. So I wanted to share that as well. So when you look at these hybrid situations, the answer to the questions when the employees are calling in regarding if I'm put into a situation because of the school, am I eligible for this? The answer is yes. And that can be intermittent or continuously. Where it becomes, where it might not be eligible is if the family has made a decision to go to virtual learning, and it's not because of the medical situation of the child, it's something that they made as a choice, we would need some type of documentation to show that it's for medical reasons of the child, or that what the reason is for that. But I would say 95% of the time, where these requests are coming in because of the choices that the school made with the hybrid situation. So I wanted to update all on that. The one thing I do want to speak about a little bit, and Pat touched on it yesterday, I thought she did a good job, is the remote work. Remember, this is leave. This is not telecommuting or remote work. If because of this hybrid situation, you want to work from home, that is a discussion between the manager and the employee using the guidelines that are out there with our policy as to operational commitments and things of that nature. If you're wanting to work from home, that's a totally different topic that is not covered by this COVID Leave Act. So I want to get that out there because sometimes there's some confusion because the hybrid situation could create that, right? It could create the situation where you want to work from home, but the manager and the employee need to assess to see if there's operational needs where you can do that and actually go through that process. I think Pat did a good job yesterday telling everyone that it's only required if it's 30 days or more. And remember, this is a hybrid situation where the employee might only be requesting 2 days a week, depending on the school situation, and the other 3 days they'd be working. I guess the answer to that question would be, is it required to go through the telecommute work agreement? Pat would say it's not required, but probably it's warranted because you want to capture that discussion between the employee and the manager as a part of that process, which goes beyond them up through Pat to some others. So I want to share a little bit about that because I know sometimes people get confused about COVID leave and then the other option of working from home because of the situation that COVID leave has started. So I'll pause there because I'm sure I've got a lot of questions coming my way.
There's one question that a few people are wondering if maybe Provost Fitzgerald could answer around faculty who don't have paid leave. If they're 9-month faculty, if they don't have paid leave, how does this work for them?
Writing up my response, and I turned my camera off because I was eating lunch, but basically covering courses is a real challenge if faculty have childcare conflicts. Although faculty are covered under the FMLA provisions, finding people to teach for them is a different type of challenge. So if a faculty member anticipates that he or she is not going to be able to completely cover their instructional responsibilities as originally planned, he or she should work with his or her department head to try to figure out what is a feasible solution. and whether that faculty member can actually teach that course that semester, whether they could have a graduate assistant or some other person helping them with the course. Quite frankly, with some of our courses, our faculty are so specialized that it's difficult to find someone else who can teach their course if they can't. So I almost would say it's a one-on-one type of situation where we have to work individually with people, because it's very difficult to give a blanket answer that's going to work for everyone.
And then there was just a follow-up question. So and you kind of touched on this, Margaret, and this might be different depending on if it's staff or faculty, but if we're home providing childcare due to hybrid or virtual learning, are we required to take leave, or can we just work from home doing work in different hours or while we're doing that at the same time?
You know, faculty have a lot of flexibility in how and where they do their work. Under normal circumstances, and some of those flexibilities apply during the pandemic as well. With a faculty appointment, as long as you're meeting your expectations and getting your work done and producing what you're supposed to be producing, you have a lot of latitude of where you are when you do that, whether it's in your office or at home or in your lab or a coffee shop. Most faculty work far more than 40 hours a week, but they tend to do it when it works for them. And so faculty will still have that same kind of flexibility during fall semester with the pandemic. However, you know, we are encountering all kinds of new challenges in how we teach and how we work with students and how we accomplish things. So, there are still those expectations that you have to deliver on what you're contracted to perform. But again, it's good to work with your department head to try to negotiate what this is going to look like for you in the fall.
I see a couple of questions in here that I know some of my people are answering, but I want to just also discuss them. So I shared at the beginning that this is a 12-week leave period if you're in a situation like this. It is tracked via FMLA, Family Medical Leave. The first 2 weeks are not, they don't count towards it, but the next 10 weeks do. So we track this on an annual basis. So what's happening was when these forms are sent in, they're sent in through the manager, we get them in HR, we review them, determine if there's more documentation, then we send back an email approving. And there's guidance on what you have to do to track your time in COVID. And Pat's on the other end of that, doing a lot of manual stuff to make sure we're keeping track of this, and Maria in my division as well. So we're tracking it much like any other FMLA. You're eligible for 12 weeks of that a year. So a lot of people have already used some of this in the first go around. So once that 12 weeks is over, then the FMLA stops, and so would the COVID leave piece. So we track it throughout, and there could be even other circumstances. Employees could have been out on maternity leave. That's all tracked as a part of this. So I wanted to share that. And then I saw another note about the for faculty that don't accrue leave. I guess the question is there anything else to do? Because you're right, some faculty don't accrue leave. In the staff, they have their leave that they can use to supplement. Right now, it's 2/3 pay, and we do not have an option for the faculty to pay the other piece. Now, what we have done in some cases, because remember, this can be intermittent, is if the employee is out on intermittent leave and they're a faculty member, we could supplement that with some teaching time or something like that. We've worked with groups that have those type of challenges. So there's an option possibly there too to help out with the situation. So hopefully I answered some of those things.
Mm-hmm. There's another one. Asking, does this apply if you have children with special needs that are unable to attend a regular daycare on days they have online school?
So, So I guess I would need to know a little bit more regarding that. Probably what I would like to do is talk to the person directly offline that is asking that. Because remember, it's all about COVID. If COVID's creating a situation that's changed the way things are happening with you, that's forced you to have your child out of daycare, I mean, we can look at that. So I'd rather take that one offline if we could. They can
that
call.
That one was my question. I can give you a call or email you later on about the specifics of our two young ones.
Sure. And that's Ruth?
Yes.
Okay, Ruth. Yeah, you can call me. You can Perfect. Call me. Yeah, just
Thank
call
you.
Me and I'll help with that.
All right. We had a couple other questions around. First, it would be wondering if there's a campus-wide policy that provides a commitment to work with families as they navigate all of this, realizing that there's potential for inequity between people if it's really up to the supervisor to determine how someone is accommodated. And then another comment that it would be helpful to have an official message to unit heads on these accommodations. So I just wonder if either Margaret or John have a response to those.
I can take a stab at some of that. So I can tell you that last school year, I think we do not have a university policy procedure that's out there. I mean, we have the remote workplace procedures, but I can tell you that in general, managers, when they were having discussions with employees during last school year, were very accommodating, provided the position can work remotely. And I can tell you from my own team, I have some people on my team that are gonna have children that are gonna be in these situations, and I'd rather have them be working than to be out on leave, right? Because if one of them were to leave, then I would be challenged in trying to, you know, cover some of the things that they would normally do. And I think that that's kind of the mindset of several of the managers that are out there. So if they need to work from home during these 2 days, or if they need to, and they can, in their jobs, and they can, or if they need to, we need to flex the schedule because of that so that they can make other arrangements, I'm going to try to work with them. And that's kind of the mindset I saw many of the managers that are out there working with during the last school year around these things. So no, there's not a policy commitment. I mean, we have the remote work procedures. I would say work with your manager. And I know one of the questions came up early on with Dr. Fitzgerald before this meeting. And I guess if there's a disagreement between a manager and an employee on the thought process behind what they want to do, can the employee speak to someone else? Most certainly they can. I mean, they can speak to HR, or because remember, this remote workplace agreement goes through the manager and then it goes on to some others. So The question came up, is there an appeal process? And there's not really a formal appeal process, but we can certainly review the situation to see if there's accommodations that we can make. Now, remember, accommodations normally are due to a disability or something like that. So this is really an informal accommodation that we'd be looking at. So hopefully that helps answer some of the questions. I know Dr. Fitzgerald had said she had to get off. So did I answer both the questions, Christy, or was there another one?
I think so. There's still some comments that I think would be, we can either come back to them, or I think I will make sure that we forward them on so that they can all be looked at. I think it might warrant some more discussion.
And if there's some one-offs out there, because I know there's like a lot of, well, what if, they can reach out to me directly or one of my team, Maria, Jill are on the call, I know. We're all handling these requests as they come in.
Mm-hmm. Margaret,
can I just Carrie Ann, I think you're right. All of you who've suggested that we need to have a message that everyone hears at the same time, I'll bring that forward, and I think that's a good suggestion. Thank you.
With regard to the PTE question before I leave this afternoon, we did an automatic one-year extension for people on tenure-track appointments or in going up for full last spring because of the pandemic. If it seems like we need to do more, we can have those discussions as well. Thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
We had another question, wondering about staff safety, and will we be allowed to offer shortened office hours in department offices? Can we keep doors closed and ask for email contact? And how do we make sure that our staff are safely at a distance from everyone?
And I know we have an FAQ out on this, and it's really departmentally looked at. We've suggested, you know, options being you rotate staff in, you rotate hours to minimize those type things. So there's an FAQ out on, I believe, the HR site and maybe one other area that speaks to this. And I know that managers are considering that as a part of their whole thought process when they're scheduling people and things of that nature.
I would just add in that a lot of the offices that I work with have been really good at analyzing their space and making use of the signage provided on the university relations website for just making it really clear in their spaces, you know, where that 6 foot distance is, encouraging, the signs again that say, if you're not feeling well, please don't come in. That's not the exact wording, but really making sure that it's clear to visitors what the standards are for your workspace too.
The only other questions I've seen on here look like they were answered by Maria in the chat, but one was a confirmation of if a staff member used all 12 weeks of FMLA due to non-COVID related reasons, what happens? And Maria mentioned that if all 12 weeks of FMLA were used, they're not eligible for further leave or the COVID paid leave. And then another question was if the 12 week period has to be continuous or if it can be intermittent. And Maria said that that can be intermittent.
Yes, it can be either. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just reading this question as it comes in. One thing I'm concerned about is trying to balance the need to be open and visible versus being socially distant and healthy. Does NDSU want us in and working or working from home if we can and social distancing to reduce the spread?
That really is, it goes back to the, obviously we want to minimize the spread. Okay, let me say that first. But that really goes back to the discussion between the manager and the employee or the departmental manager on you know, their position. That all needs to be considered in that, the aspect of things. Because remember, the main difference this time between this time and last time when school was in is our students were gone too. They were all being instructed, taught online at the time. So many of our employees were working remotely too because there wasn't the need for that interface. And I think we've learned a lot since the last time. But now our students are coming here, right? And there's going to be some positions that require interface. And I know that managers are trying to be creative in the way they go about this. I hear them, they talk to me all the time. And I think they will continue to do that. It's not just a black and white thing. And I think that we need to make sure that, you know, that continues, those discussions continue to happen.
A new question, if you're working from home and injure yourself, if you sprain your back or something like that, technically it's not a workplace injury unless you have a remote work agreement. So would it affect your workers' comp if you do not have that remote worksite agreement? And if so, should all faculty be advised to complete it?
All right. Is Jennifer on? that is probably something that she can discuss. Pat, I don't know if that's something you want to weigh in on. It's not my expertise.
I would probably say that's why we recommend that to have a remote worksite agreement is just to make sure that it's clear when you're going to be working and when you're not going to be working. It's been one of the concerns, what happens if you're injured at home and how do you prove that you were actually working or not working? So I think it's not a slam dunk, but it just is for your benefit to make sure that your supervisor understands when you're going to be working at home to help cover you in situations like this.
I'm going to go back to one question that it looks like I missed, and I'm not sure where it came in the conversation. So Shannon, you might, I might need you to clarify if we disagree with actions taken, who's the contact? And I think this was related to how the safety precautions were done for office by office.
Yeah, right. This is Shannon. And just to kind of, I was going to elaborate again, following Beth's comment. If we are concerned about our own health for whatever reason and don't agree with the decisions that are being made, who is the next person that we contact to make sure that we're comfortable if, for whatever reason?
Mm-hmm. So I have a couple thoughts. One, we have a policy for grievance where it would cover some of these things if you're not satisfied with the outcome of a decision, a process, a procedure, those type of things. Obviously, I would encourage that you speak to the manager to see if you can handle that grievance. But then, you know, through the grievance process, you can go to the next manager, et cetera. If it's a personal situation where you need an accommodation because of a disability or something like that, then we have a policy for that as well. And HR would get involved and help with the management team. But I would say the first thing you want to do is try to address it with the leader of that department, that manager, to see if, you know, your concerns can be addressed and try to change. And if you're not satisfied, we look at the other options. Does that help, Shannon?
Thank you, yes.
One other thing I want to clarify, because I think I saw that there was a comment about face coverings not being, they're mm-hmm. In the classroom. Is everyone aware that we did change our face covering expectations so that all of us, including students, wear them anytime we're around people?
I saw that too, and I was going to
say. So that's an important change that might be of a little more comfort for frontline staff. Everybody who comes into your space should be wearing a face covering. That expectation was pretty black and white and communicated directly to the students last week, I think. And Casey's nodding. I know that there's going to be some more conversation about that with students as they come in. And Carrie Ann is asking, can you take them off in the library? Only if you are, you know, all alone in the library. Otherwise, you need to have your face covering on. Because we had some conversation, you know, yesterday too. 6 feet is a good number, but there's too much movement and there's too many people to assume that you can have a tape measure and just, you know, hold your 6 feet out. So we're really going to have to all contribute responsibly to the environment, and the students are going to get that message pretty powerfully in a lot of different ways. So I think the session tomorrow will have a little bit more about how to work with students if you have someone who shows up without it. But for starters, they are clearly being informed that they need to be prepared to be wearing face coverings, that they should bring some. We are providing one, at least one, to every student. I think some other divisions have some other face coverings coming their way. So, but every student will be provided at least one. And I don't know if you all know about the signage that we did get some CARES Act funding actually for signage. So you can make sure and have that sign in your lobby. It's on the University Relations Resources website. And there's an 11 by 17 sign that says face covering required. So you can have a couple of those for your spaces, or depending on the size of your building, as many as you need. Those are gonna be everywhere. So if your space doesn't have them yet, let us know, we'll get some sent over. So those are the kinds of things that are occurring now. And I think we're all prepared to just keep working toward solutions as, you know, human beings start interacting. Casey, do you wanna add anything?
I was just actually, I was looking at the comments there, and some of the continued conversation around the library in particular. And my understanding of the way that the policy is worded is really that face coverings are required indoors at all times, unless you are in a private space. So like right now I am in my office and I'm alone. And so my mask is off. But I can tell you that I've adjusted over the last few days myself to when I need to go to the restroom or down to get a cup of coffee, the face mask goes on within the office here, within the building. And so that should be the same for all of us, students, faculty, staff, in any building. So the only spaces in the library I can think of are potentially a study room that they check out by themselves, those types of things. And so, and then even outside, the masks are really encouraged if they can't maintain that 6-foot distance. So that's really the message that we're going to be sharing with students is really, unless you are in a private space, those face masks should be on.
Casey, this is Beth Toomey from the libraries here. One of my colleagues just put the exact language there. So can the language on the website be amended to that? Because right now, students can point to that and say, I am socially distant, so I don't need to have a mask on.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that. I think what I think is in the library, you might be 6 feet away from people for 5 minutes, but then there's too many people and too much movement to count on that. So that's intended to be, you know, when you're in a space that you control, but when you're in a general public space, I think there's movement. So there's probably a different understanding.
I think over time, I can speak for OVU, we're at the Stop and Go. And I agree with what Casey said. When I'm here, I'm in the office right now. But if somebody walks in my office, my mask is ready and I can put it on. When employees, students, or whoever come over, we require a mask. If they come in without one, we remind them of the policy, the procedures. And they normally are gonna go out and get their mask, they just forgot it. It's more of a administrative oversight. If they don't have one, we provide one of our masks that are disposable. But the more we can do as employees, students of the organization to make people aware of it, I think the culture is gonna automatically, you know, adapt to that. So I think that you'll see it's common. I was over at the union yesterday presenting on our new rollout of our system, which I'm excited about. And we wore masks the whole time while we were presenting. And it was kind of goofy, but we did. And I noticed that most people in the building, the attendees all did, but most people in the building were wearing them too, to include the students on tours and stuff like that. So it's getting out there. I think that I think you're going to be pleased with the way people are conforming to it.
One of the follow-up questions was if cubicles in an office are considered private space, and I think, and just adding to the clarification of what we mean when, like, if you can guarantee that you won't kind of accidentally bump into someone or be within someone's 6 feet space, then it wouldn't be considered private space. Is that
the question's about, is, does a cubicle, if there's a divider between 2 feet, two people, and it's less than 6 feet, I would think we'd want to wear our mask, right? Our face coverings, because that cubicle, you're right, people are going to get up and go around. And I think it's more the private spaces, like the offices, where you can do some of what I'm doing now. But he's right. I mean, Casey, whenever I go out of here to the bathroom or to go make a copy or whatever, my mask is going on. And if I forget, you know, right after I'm going out the door, I'll go back and get it. You know, it's pretty soon it's going to be a natural thing. Like when we go through the airports and we have to go through security now with the stuff that's going on. So I think that, in my opinion, and I know that's not an FAQ that's out there right now, but a cubicle is not really considered a private space unless you're the only one in the building, you know, and you're in a cubicle, something like that.
There's still some more discussion around the library and how visitors are not wearing masks. So wondering if we have clear signage on any of our buildings that say like masks required in these buildings. And library does, okay. I'm gonna jump to another question that was asked earlier. Does NDSU have any intention to have a policy that faculty or staff are expected to quarantine if they return from an area that has known outbreaks, whether for personal or private reasons for travel?
That's probably Mike Bohr, maybe. He could weigh in. He's on.
Yeah, I can take that. We would be looking to follow the guidance that's issued by the state and not implementing anything unique to NDSU. So if the state were to change, then it becomes a state and a health officer directive, and we'd be expected to comply with that.
Thank you. I don't believe I have any other questions that we've missed, unless I missed it, and then in which case either unmute or type it again, but I think we made it through the other questions.
I'll just make one final comment. So I know there's probably some of you that are out there that didn't ask a question because you didn't want to put your personal situation out. Please reach out to Maria, Jill, or myself if you have those questions, and we can help you navigate through that. There's no stupid question. I mean, this is unprecedented times, and we want to work with you. So
another comment talking about the Memorial Union announcement that came yesterday cited campus policy that face coverings are required, and they include conference rooms, lounges, retail dining, and that we could consider study rooms common areas because they're used by others throughout the day. So that was a comment, not a question. So I think just another comment that we should requesting to amend the language to make it clear when masks are required. Any other questions?
I don't think it was touched on, but I also see in the chat talking about the survey responses on whether or not people are likely to wear face covering. Recall that if I remember correctly, when that survey was out, we weren't under our current guidance. We were still using the 6 foot distancing. If you can maintain that, there wouldn't be an expectation. So those numbers are dated to the, you know, the time frame that the survey was active.
Any other questions?
It's maybe not a question, but it's a comment. Because yesterday we were talking about maps for classrooms and stuff that need to be illustrated to the students. And we know that's a very important thing that we have a preparation for welcoming the students. Like 12,000 students come to the campus and asking questions. So I was wondering if we need to have an easy way to communicate information, because we have a numerous number of guidelines and policies. And if there is any way to make this the best way to communicate this in a graphical way, like use graphical illustration to put signs for guidelines everywhere so students can read the map for classrooms movement and also can read the instruction in a very simple way. We know that one picture can convey thousands of words. So students sometimes don't have time to read hundreds of emails to get the points. But if we emphasize that by adding more signs with a graphical illustration, would be the easy way to really spread this kind of guidelines and policies that we need to see the students. I know that we have a lot of work, but in that kind of way, I can help if there is a need for graphical representation of any of these guidelines. I'd be more than happy to help on that.
I know Laura and University Relations does have, Becky, yeah, there's a couple people are sharing the link to the COVID signage request that University Relations has, where you can request for that signage for your building, saying that you've got face coverings required there. And then a couple other things to remember to wash your face and, or sorry, wash your hands and remove your face covering appropriately with some graphics. And I think that those were, Laura, you can maybe say more about this, but I think they were covered by CARES Act funds, so it's not up to the department to pay for it.
Right. Those are the ones that, if you order through that page, we can run it through the CARES Act funding. And they have both, people kind of asked for some fine print, so they have some type on them that are, you know, something you can point to if you do get into a discussion with someone, but they are meant to be very quick visual reminders. And I think that we're gonna need them in all the spaces, in addition to, you know, sort of peer pressure and cultural acceptance, and, you know, everything is gonna be as many pieces and parts as we can put together at one time as possible. But we see much more face covering acceptance on campus in the last 2 weeks than we have all summer. So I do think it's moving in the right direction. And I think it's really important for all of us to be really good role models. You know, one of the things we're going to remind student leaders at the Welcome Week orientation next week is that, for example, their social media presence is a message. So, you know, if they would be leaders in their images, having distancing and wearing face coverings and sort of still having a good college experience while you do what needs to be done for now, you know, we're reminding everybody about those kinds of things. So, I mean, admission, as Anne points out, admission has done a really good job of modeling that behavior. So we're doing everything we can to have the students understand that they can carry on. They just need to be mindful. And I'm the first to admit it's a big habit change. So I need reminders from time to time. So it's a little bit that we're gonna just have to keep helping each other.
And the way to be more convincing than to be enforcing, because policies have a lot of enforcing thing, but we need it to be presented in a way to be convincing. Teenage is always rejecting any advices. So how we really convince him to do that?
got a couple more questions that came in. Can anyone speak about resources for staff around mental health concerns or isolation? Just knowing that the EAP that we have is nice, but it's a little limited.
So obviously besides EAP, we have our medical coverage that can assist with, you know, different things like that. I'm not aware of other options. I know that our EAP right now is being utilized more than it ever has, which is understandable. And I'm unsure if our own counseling area would really be able to get involved in any of that stuff. So besides like state and local, you know, help that might be out there, the EAP and our own medical coverage, I don't know of other options. I know I've had to recently get involved in, you know, being empathetic towards different things that are going on. So I'm doing my best to help out when I can out there, but if there's other thoughts out there, please share.
John, I just shared a link to a resource page that our health promotion staff put together. So to answer the first question, the NDSU Counseling Center cannot see faculty and staff for their own personal concerns. They would just not have the resources to do that. You can consult with them about a concern related to a student, but anyway, the staff did, there's a lot of, they compiled this resource page because there are a lot of like online and virtual sorts of help features out there. And so many of them are listed at the website I put in the chat. So that might be an additional resource.
This is Jill. I encourage you, yes, we have wonderful insurance, to reach out to your provider. If you're not working with a particular counselor, ask them for a recommendation. They can help refer you. Not that you necessarily have to, but sometimes that's the quickest way to get into one of the counselors or therapists within the region. And again, like I said, we have great coverage. I can tell you from personal use, they pay a lot. They pay quite a bit. So please reach out, use your insurance. If you go through Sanford, work through Sanford, or if you're a Essentia participant, use them. They're very good.
We had another question. Is there a process in place to assist students who are not able to wear a face covering due to a documented issue so that they're not continuously addressed to put one on?
So I'll try to answer this one. Thanks, Sherry. My answer is yes and no, both. So we've talked about it a lot in the classroom. And students are being directed, if they have a condition where they're not supposed to wear a mask, they're supposed to work through disability services to have that documented and to determine what a reasonable accommodation would be. And so I think I don't think we've actually talked about that in a more expansive way outside of the classroom when we're talking about other places on campus. And this is sparking me to ask some of those questions, but I believe that same process would play out for access to services and those types of things. So at this point, just not wearing a mask is not seen, to my understanding, is not seen as a reasonable accommodation on the national level through disability services, because the purpose of the mask is to protect others. So it might seem like a reasonable accommodation for that one person, but it's putting everybody else at risk. And so I'm not sure if they've had more conversations about different types of face shields and those types of things. So I'll need to check in with Mark Koppen to see where they're landing with that.
Casey, there's a follow-up. Is a reasonable accommodation to ask them to join the class remotely?
Yes.
And I would say to just add on to that, yes, and again, it should be still approved through disability services. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want faculty to be sort of deciding what reasonable accommodations are, because we'll run afoul of ADA laws. But that absolutely could be one of the accommodations recommended.
Okay, thank you. Looks like Sarah Vandeveld has also shared a few resources in the chat related to the mental health resources for staff and faculty.
Thank you. And I was just realizing that in the site that I sent, it's a little dated. So I will have our team work on some updated virtual resources as well.
We have about 5 minutes left. Are there any other questions? Either unmute or ask in the chat.
I would just like to acknowledge something that I experienced, and I think a lot of other people have as well as we've come back to campus, is that, and I'm not somebody that's been overly concerned about exposure in my own personal life, but it is strange to come back. It is strange to see students in the union today. It was strange to be in a training with other people this morning, even with a mask on. And so just to acknowledge that that is anxiety producing for all of us as employees, and that it's going to take a little bit of time to transition and have it feel normal again. So that's all I wanted to end with.
Anyone else have final comments or final questions? Not seeing any. All right, well, we can follow up with the link that Laura will send out after we get the recording back from Zoom and send it out to folks and to the rest of the campus who weren't able to attend. So thanks all.
Thanks everybody.